There was a night when I was working the Doctor Strange premiere in Hollywood, and it was one of those massive, full production, shut down the street events. I was standing on the footprint, scanning the crowd for any anomalies, which, if you know Hollywood, is kind of a futile exercise because everything and everyone is a bit of an anomaly. At the same time, I was watching The Arrivals, and the energy was electric. Fans screaming, cameras flashing, paparazzi on ladders, publicists orchestrating every movement like it's a live production. And the carpet, by the way, was actually red, which is not always the case. But I digress. Car after car pulls up, doors open, stars step out. And I remember watching Benedict Cumberbatch step out of his car straight into this wall of sound and excitement and adoration. And if you've ever been around Marvel fans, you know that level of fandom is its own thing. And in that moment, watching all of this unfold, I had this very specific thought. Does he feel like he's arrived? Like, is this the role? Do massive stars have a moment, a role, a title, a milestone, where they step out of the car and think, this is it, I made it, I am finally there? Because from the outside, it looks like the clearest possible version of success. And then, almost immediately, that thought was followed by another. Do I have that? Is there a role, a title, an achievement that would make me feel like I've arrived? Like I could point to it and say, okay, I know what I'm doing now. I belong here. I have officially made it. I actually brought this up with an executive coach at one point because I started wondering if I was doing it wrong. Should I be setting goals tied to titles, to positions, to some kind of clearly defined next step? Because that's what we're often told to do. But the truth is, that's never really been what drives me. What drives me is learning, growing, stretching my brain into spaces it hasn't been before, facing something new and figuring it out. And for some people, a specific title is the goal. That moment of arrival is what they're working toward. But for others of us, we're wired for and motivated by the journey. And of course, that means there's a catch. If you're wired that way, you don't really arrive. You kind of evolve into the next challenge. Because the moment you start to get comfortable, you then see the next thing that you don't know yet, which sounds like growth until it starts to feel like you're never quite there. So you exist in this constant state of there's more that I could be learning, there's more that I could be understanding, there's probably something I'm missing. And if you sit in that long enough, it starts to feel like maybe I don't actually know what I'm doing. Welcome to the Unknown Knowns, where intuition meets tradecraft. I'm Dr. Angela Lewis, and this is a space for people who think for a living. Intelligence professionals, leaders, and decision makers navigating complexity, uncertainty, and imperfect information in a fast-paced world. Each week, we'll explore how intuition, bias, and judgment shape the way we make sense of complexity and how to get better at it. Today, we're digging into imposter syndrome and its relationship to uncertainty, judgment, and what it actually means to know what you're doing in a field where perfect certainty doesn't really exist. Now, imposter syndrome isn't just a buzzword that we throw around casually. It was first identified in the late 1970s by psychologists Pauline Clance and Suzanne Ines, who were studying high-achieving individuals, primarily women at the time, who, despite clear evidence of their competence, persistently felt like frauds, like their success was accidental or temporary or about to be exposed. And what's important here is this. They weren't studying underperformers. These weren't people who were faking it. They were studying high achievers, people who, by any external measure, had already arrived. And yet, internally, they didn't feel that way at all. So that raises a really, really important question, especially in fields like leadership and intelligence. What if that feeling isn't a sign that you don't belong? What if it's actually connected to how seriously you take the responsibility of getting it right? Because this shows up all the time in leadership and intelligence. And we probably don't talk about it enough. You've done the work, you've interrogated your biases, you've double and triple and quadruple checked your operational planning for potential pitfalls, you've verified your sources, you've pressure tested your assumptions, and you still worry that you might be wrong. Not because you're unprepared, but because you understand exactly how much you don't know. We tend to call that imposter syndrome. But what if, at least in this field, that label is getting it wrong? Well, let's start with something simple. In intelligence, and honestly, in leadership, there's no answer key. There's no back-of-the-book solution where you can flip to page 312 and confirm that you got it right. You're making judgments under uncertainty, with incomplete information, and often with real consequences attached. So, of course, you question yourself. The people who care about getting it right are the ones most aware of how easy it is to get it wrong. And I would even go so far as to argue that a baseline level of quote-unquote imposter syndrome in intelligence work isn't a flaw. It's often a byproduct of doing the job well. In fact, it sits uncomfortably close to intellectual humility, close enough that, from the inside, it can be hard to tell the difference. Because the more you understand the gaps in your collection, the limits of your sources, the number of plausible alternatives, the harder it is to feel absolute certainty. And honestly, if you don't feel a little uncertain, I'd worry more about that. There's actually a growing body of research around what psychologists call intellectual humility. Researchers like Mark Leary and Tanel Porter define it as a kind of awareness, an understanding that what you know is always incomplete, and a willingness to update your thinking when new information comes in. And importantly, that is not the same as low confidence. It's being able to say, I have a judgment here, and I'm also aware of its limits. You see this show up in research on high-performing decision makers too. Political psychologist Philip Tetlock found that the best forecasters aren't the most certain. They're the most willing to update. At its core, intellectual humility simply means that you can hold a judgment while still being open to the possibility that you might be wrong. And that matters because in leadership and intelligence, you are always working with an incomplete picture. There are gaps in your collection, limits to your sources, alternative explanations that haven't been fully ruled out, opportunities that can't be fully investigated, for a whole host of reasons. So the question isn't, am I certain? The question is, have I applied enough rigor that this judgment is worth acting on, given what I know right now? Internally, intellectual humility can feel a lot like imposter syndrome. They can even sound the same. I might be wrong. I don't have the full picture. What am I missing? But they're not the same thing. Imposter syndrome says I don't belong here, while intellectual humility says this problem is complex and I'm taking it seriously. Honestly, what psychology calls intellectual humility, intelligence professionals experience as doing the job properly. And if that's what doing the job properly feels like, it also explains why it can feel so different from what we see everywhere else. On the flip side, let's be honest, there's no shortage of confident opinions in the world. Executives can get a hot take just about anywhere. Consultants, media, LinkedIn, someone with a strong point of view and a good microphone, or frankly, anyone who's been handed a podcast. But a hot take is not the same thing as intelligence. What makes intelligence different isn't just access to information. It is the rigor that sits behind the judgment. The special sauce, so to speak, in intelligence isn't certainty, it's rigor. It's breaking down a problem, questioning your assumptions, evaluating your sources, considering alternative explanations, actively trying to prove yourself wrong before someone else does. It's not just taking in information, it's deconstructing it and then reconstructing it into something that is actually useful for a decision maker. Most hot takes don't go through that process. They simply assert. The thing is, the more rigor you apply, the harder it is to feel completely certain. Because now you can see where you might be wrong, what you don't know, and what could change your assessment. So that feeling of, I'm not sure I've got this exactly right, is not failure. That's often the result of having done it properly. Confidence is easy when you haven't done the work to understand what could be wrong. And here's where this collides with reality, because leaders, understandably, want certainty. They want clear answers, clean judgments, confidence that they can act on. And there's actually a long history behind that instinct. Economists like John Maynard Keynes argued that decision makers are constantly trying to create conditions that reduce uncertainty, because it's incredibly difficult to act without some sense of stability or predictability. But at the same time, thinkers like Frank Knight made an important distinction. Some risks can be calculated, but true uncertainty can't be eliminated. True certainty isn't actually what intelligence provides. Intelligence is not a crystal ball. And this is why I've never loved the term predictive intelligence, because predictive implies a level of precision and certainty that really just doesn't exist in this kind of work. what we're actually doing is something much more honest than that. There is always a level of the unknown, what's often referred to as the Knightian uncertainty principle, which states that the future is fundamentally unpredictable, and intelligence sits right at that intersection. It's not there to eliminate uncertainty, because it can't. Its role is to assess it, to reduce it where possible, to characterize it where it can't, and to give decision makers a clearer understanding of what is known, what is likely, and what remains unknown. You see this in related research on ambiguity and risk too, like the work behind the Ellsberg paradox, which shows that people don't just dislike risk, they're deeply uncomfortable with uncertainty that they can't quantify. So when leaders ask for certainty, what they're really often asking for is relief from that discomfort. Intelligence gives you better fidelity on uncertainty. At its best, intelligence increases our understanding of uncertainty. It helps leaders see the landscape more clearly, understand the risks more precisely, and make better decisions without pretending the unknowns don't exist. And when that reality isn't fully understood, when leaders expect certainty in a system where it doesn't exist, that's when rigor starts to look like hesitation, and intellectual humility starts to look like a lack of confidence. And here's where this becomes a problem. Organizations, and unfortunately, leaders, misread this all the time. They see hesitation, nuance, careful language, someone asking, "What are we missing?" And they interpret it as a lack of confidence, as hedging, or worse, as a lack of competence. Meanwhile, the most confident voice in the room, the one with the cleanest, most certain answer, is the one that often gets heard, even when that confidence may not be backed by the same level of rigor. So this is where leadership really matters, because the job of an intelligence professional is not to eliminate uncertainty. Thus, the job of an intelligence leader is to protect the space where uncertainty can exist without undermining the authority of the people doing the work. That means separating uncertainty in the problem from the competence of the analyst. It means rewarding well-calibrated judgment, not just confidence, and normalizing language like, here's what we know, here's what we assess, here's where we could be wrong, and here's what might change our assessment. That means there's a bit of a pivot for Intel professionals too. Instead of thinking, I don't know what I'm doing, try, I have a solid understanding of the limits of what can be known here, or I have a solid understanding of the limits of what I do know here. That's not insecurity, that's discipline. Confidence isn't certainty. It's being able to stand behind your judgment while acknowledging its limits. So this isn't just about imposter syndrome. It's about whether we actually value the rigor that makes intelligence, intelligence. Because in this field, the goal isn't to eliminate uncertainty. It's to apply enough rigor that your judgment is worth trusting anyway. And the people who feel that tension most acutely are usually the ones doing it right. So if I were to leave you with three takeaways today. First, intelligence doesn't give you certainty. It gives you better fidelity on uncertainty. And that's what better decisions are built on. Second, intellectual humility isn't a weakness. It's one of the most important characteristics of both a strong leader and a strong intelligence professional. And finally, in this field, arriving doesn't mean reaching some point of complete certainty. It means getting comfortable enough with uncertainty that you can work with it and maybe even embrace it a little. Thanks for listening to The Unknown Knowns. If this episode made you think or rethink, share it with a colleague or friend who's ready to level up their tradecraft. Subscribe for more short, sharp conversations about the art and science of professional judgment. Until next time, stay curious, stay grounded, and keep turning intelligence into impact.